Relationships are messy. You're going to hear me say this a lot over the next few weeks. Though honestly, if we've ever sat down to talk about life, chances are one of us has said it. Because it's true. Relationships are messy. Now, they can be validating, life-giving, they can be meaningful and sacred, they can be all of those things and more, and still be messy. You see, we are relational beings. We make sense of the world through our relationships, be those relationships with people or institutions or the realities of life. Over the next few weeks, I'm inviting us to consider our relationships with other people and how we play a role in the health and experience of those relationships. All of our relationships shape and change who we are. In our relationships, we are a part of something bigger. You know, we're a part of something bigger in all of these relationships, like maybe a family or an office place or a neighborhood or a classroom. These relationships make us a part of something. Each of these little systems that we're a part of, they affect us. It's like putting a rubber band around your fingers, right? And as you stretch and move, every time one finger moves, every other finger feels what's happening in some way, shape, or form. When I'm stressed or overreacting, it stresses my whole family and everything changes. Actually, when I'm stressed and overreacting, it affects my whole family, it affects my friends, my coworkers, all of you, just to name a few. Like, if this is me, and that's that rubber band, it's almost like there's another system over here, and I'm tied into that one, and then, like, another one, and there's all these hands and all these rubber bands, and every time something moves in one of them, it moves me, and then it moves everything else. It's amazing how interconnected and interdependent all of our relationships are. There are so many. There's all this movement and this pulling, and the most important realization we can have is this. We can't control the movement of anything in these messy relationships except ourselves. The only thing I can do to bring more balance and health to all of these little systems I'm a part of and all of the relationships in my life, the only thing I can do to bring more balance and health to that is in how I act and react. And that's what we're going to talk about these next couple of weeks. We're going to talk about how we are a part of and are connected and how we behave inside these little systems that are all of our relationships. And we're going to use the guidance of our scriptures and the wisdom of Rabbi Friedman. Now, Rabbi Friedman was an amazing psychologist, amazing storyteller, and one heck of a rabbi. In his book, Friedman's Fables, this is an amazing book. I've got a couple extra copies if anybody wants one. You can find it on Amazon. If you're a Prime member, you can have it to your house by Tuesday. It's a good book. He takes some of the messiest and most complicated parts of relationship and all of the relational issues we encounter and gives us a little bit of distance and humor to address them by telling stories and parables that let us look at things that are so tough to talk about personally. But let us talk about something because, you know, it's a story. He takes these messy parts of relationship because it's not easy to talk about them. But talking about a story, that's a little easier. For example, there's no pictures, so I'm not going to be turning. There was a man who had given much thought to what he wanted from life. He had experienced many moods and trials. He had experimented with different ways of living, and he had his share of both success and failure. At last, he began to see clearly where he wanted to go in life. Diligently, he searched for the right opportunity. Sometimes he came close, only to be pushed away. Often, he applied all of his strength and imagination, only to find the path hopelessly blocked. And then, at last it came. But the opportunity would not wait. It would be made available only for a short time. If it were seen that he was not committed, the opportunity would never come again. Eager to arrive at that destination, he started on his journey. With each step, he wanted to move faster. With each thought about that amazing goal, his heart beat quicker. With each vision of what lay ahead, he found renewed vigor, strength, that had left him since his early youth was returning, and desires, all kinds of hopeful desires, reawakened from their long, dormant place in his life. Hurrying along, he came upon a bridge that crossed through the middle of town. It had been built high above a river in order to protect the floods. He started across the bridge, and then he noticed someone coming from the opposite direction. As they moved closer, it seemed as though the other person was coming to greet him. He could see clearly, however, that he did not know this other person, who was dressed similarly except for something tied around his waist. When they were within hailing distance, he could see that what the other had about his waist was a rope. It was wrapped around him many times and probably, if extended, would reach a length of about 30 feet. The other began to uncurl the rope, and just as they were coming near, the stranger said, "Pardon me, would you be so kind as to hold the end of this for a moment?" Surprised by the politely phrased but curious request, the man agreed without thought, reached out, and took the rope. "Thank you," said the other, who then added, "Two hands now, and remember, hold tight," whereupon the man jumped off of the bridge. Quickly, the free-falling body hurtled the distance of the rope's length from the bridge, and the man was abruptly pulled instinctively. He held tight and was almost dragged over the side. He managed to brace himself against the edge, however, and after having caught his breath, looked down at the other, dangling close to oblivion. "What are you trying to do?" he yelled. "Just hold tight," said the other man. "This is ridiculous," the man thought, and he began trying to haul the other in, but he couldn't get the leverage, however. It was as though the weight of the other person and the length of the rope had been carefully calculated in advance, so that together they had some sort of counterweighted system just beyond his strength to bring the other man back safely. "Why did you do this?" he yelled. "Remember," said the other, "if you let go, I'll be lost." "But I cannot pull you up," the man cried. "It's okay. I'm your responsibility now," said the other. "Well, I did not ask for it," said the man. "If you let go, I'm lost," repeated him again. The man on the bridge began to look around for help, but there was no one. How long would he have to wait? Why did this have to befall him now, just as he was on the verge of success? He examined the side, searching for a place to tie the rope, but other than some protrusions, perhaps maybe a hole in the boards, but the railing was unusually uniform in shape, and there were no spaces for such things. There was no way to get rid of this newfound burden, even temporarily. "What do you want?" he asked the man hanging below. "Just your help," he answered. "How can I help? I cannot pull you in, and there's no place to tie the rope. I can't go get help." "Oh, I know that. Just hang on. That will be enough, thank you. Maybe tie the rope around your waist. It should be easier." Feeling that his arms could not hold out much longer, he tied the rope around his waist. "Why did you do this?" he asked again. "Don't you see what you've done? What possible purpose could this have in mind?" "Just remember," said the other, "my life is in your hands now." What should he do? "If I let go, all my life I will know that I let this other man die. If I stay, I risk losing my momentum toward this long sought after salvation. Either way, this will haunt me forever." With ironic humor, he thought to die himself instantly, maybe just jumping off the bridge while still tied to the other man. That would teach the fool. But he wanted to live, and he wanted to live life fully. "What choice do I have to make? How shall I ever decide?" As time went by, still no one came. The critical moment of decision was drawing near. To show his commitment to his own goals, he would have to continue on his own journey. It was already almost too late to arrive in time, but now a terrible choice had to be made. A new thought occurred to him. While he could not pull this other one up solely by his own efforts, if the other man would shorten the rope on his end by maybe curling it around his waist, together they could do this. Actually, the other could do it by himself, so long as he kept standing, but perhaps they could do it even better together. "Now listen," he shouted down. "I think I know how to save you," and he explained the plan. But the other wasn't interested. "You mean you won't help? I told you I cannot pull you up myself, and I don't think I can hang on much longer either." "You must try," the other shouted back in tears now. "If you fail, I will die." The point of decision arrived. What should he do? My life or this other's? And then a new idea, a revelation. So new, in fact, it seemed heretical. So alien it was to his traditional way of living. "I want you to listen carefully," he shouted down, "because I mean what I am about to say. I will not accept the position of choice for your life, only for my own. The position of choice for your own life I hereby give back to you." "What do you mean?" the other asked, afraid. "I mean simply it's up to you. You decide which way this ends. I will be act as that counterweight. You do the pulling and bring yourself up. I'll even tug a little from here." He began unwinding the rope from around his waist and braced himself against the side. "You cannot mean what you say," the other shrieked. "You would not be so selfish. I'm your responsibility. What could be so important that you would let someone die? Do not do this to me." The man on the bridge waited a moment. There was no change in the tension of the rope. "I accept your choice," he said. And at last he freed his hands. Has someone handed you their rope before? Has someone else's need ever kept you from your own progress? Have you ever been asked to devote your time and your energy to a relationship where the other person isn't putting any time or energy into helping themselves but expects you to do it all? Now, mind you, the extreme nature of this story makes some of it laughable. But this is tough stuff because this is real. There are some of you in this room right now who are completely exhausted from having held on to someone else's rope for a very long time. Your time, your energy, your ability to tend to other things in life, including yourself, that's been taken. There are also some of you in this room right now who are swinging freely at the bottom of someone else's rope that they're holding for you. Now, it may not be entirely, but there are parts of our lives, even small parts, that sometimes we hand to other folks and expect them to just take care of for us. You may be taking care of things in lots of ways, but unload just a specific issue to someone else. The story of the bridge can be difficult to hear, because none of us want to believe that we would ever be the person just freely hanging there expecting someone else to do the work. And none of us also want to see ourselves as the person on the bridge because we don't want to have to consider the harsh reality of what it means to let go. So let's take a look at advice and wisdom from our scriptures. People tried to hand Jesus rope all the time. Hear this story from the Gospel of John. Now there was a Jewish festival and Jesus went to Jerusalem. In Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate in the north city, there's a pool with an Aramaic name of Bethsaida. It had 5 covered little porches, and a crowd of people who were sick and blind, unable to walk, people who were paralyzed, they sat there. Now a certain man who was there had been sick for 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lying there, knowing that this man had been there a long time, Jesus asked him, "Do you want to get well?" The sick man answered him, "Sir, I don't have anyone who can put me in the water when it's stirred up with the healing bubbles. When I'm trying to get to it, someone else usually is there before me." Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat and walk." Immediately this man was well, and he picked up his mat and he walked. Here is Jesus surrounded by people in need, folks struggling in all sorts of ways. He strikes up with a conversation everyone in town knows because the man has been there begging folks to take him to the healing waters all the time, 38 years now. And Jesus opens with a pretty direct, if not rude, question. "Do you want to get well?" It seems a silly question, doesn't it? Who would say no? But this is Jesus trying to be a part of change in someone's life without holding on to the rope. This is Jesus wanting to be helpful while not assuming sole responsibility for the full weight of someone's need. He's observing. He's empathizing. He's connecting. He's encouraging. What he is not doing is picking up the man and carrying him to the water. What he's not doing is spending the rest of his ministry carrying this one guy. "Listen, disciples, I know we had some pretty big plans. I know you've been throwing around the word Savior, but I'm going to stay here at the pool, and I'm just going to take this guy to the water a few times a day the rest of my life. He needs me. I'm going to help him. Everybody else can figure something else out." This is a bridge story, except that Jesus doesn't take the rope to begin with. He instead offers the man a choice. Now, much like the bridge parable, this is a pretty hyperbolic example. Get up and walk is not a typical choice we offer someone. But stopping to give someone a chance to make a decision and act in their own best interest, that's our takeaway today. Stopping to give someone the choice to act in their own best interest. You see, the guy on the bridge is so intentional when he says it. I will not accept the position of choice for your life, only for my own. The position of choice for your life I hereby give back to you. If you need to write that out to keep for a special moment in your life, let me know. I'll get you a copy. You see, he offers the support and help necessary for that bridge dangler to be successful. He does. He helps develop a plan. He offers to be a part of it. He wants to be engaged in a part of what's needed. He's willing to support the effort should our freeloader choose to put any energy of their own into the situation. But if the dangler won't do anything, why should the guy on the bridge be stuck doing it all? That's the choice, isn't it? Will we put all of our energy into a situation in such a way that the person who really should be responsible doesn't need to do anything anymore? We cannot make decisions for others, nor should we devote our lives and energy in such a way that they don't have to make decisions for themselves. What we can do is ask others to become active in their own rescue. We can brace ourselves should they be willing to start climbing, and then we can recognize that there is a moment where letting go isn't needed because they've made it back. We also have to recognize there is a moment when letting go is not heartless. Because if we keep holding on, we risk losing two lives, theirs and our own. Relationships are messy. Amen.